Hello, friends. Hello, and good afternoon, or good evening, or good morning, wherever you are in the world. This is Out of This World Radio and Television with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW here in Bellevue, Washington on 1150 AM, just outside Seattle in the United States, in North America. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, UFOs, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. The purpose of my program is to raise consciousness and to make this planet a much better place. And I know that with everyone's help, we'll do it. We'll make this planet a much better place. Out of This World Radio is the fastest growing spiritual and psychic and UFO radio program in the world, with listeners in over 70 countries. And I guarantee today's show will be really out of this world. For the first hour, I'll be interviewing Dr. Angel Luis Fernandez, a wonderful man who is an accomplished diplomat, scholar, and doctor who's organizing a wonderful conference of peace and light in the Dominican Republic, August 19th, 20th, and 21st. It'll be followed by a wonderful interview I had, a pre-recorded interview with Eric von Doniken in Switzerland, who's one of the world's most famous UFO researchers. The second hour, I'll be discussing two upcoming conferences, the Galactic Wisdom Conference in Olympia, Washington, from June 10th to the 13th, and the Dreamers Conference in Helsinki, Finland, from May 12th to the 15th. Joining me on the show during the second part of the program will be Scott Lemriel, who will be a guest speaker at both conferences. And if there's time, I will be also discussing the inner Earth and my invitation to visit the city of Telos beneath Mount Shasta. I wanted to thank everyone for their support. Out of This World Radio is a nonprofit program supported entirely by donations. And for those who'd like to donate, please just go to the donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com. I'd like to thank everyone for their wonderful donations and support, especially Judith in California, Marie and Alan in Camino Island, and everyone around the world who's helped me raise consciousness and make this planet a better place. We're also looking for sponsors and advertisers for the show, and any advertising on the program will have a worldwide audience for your goods and services. Finally, I'd like to thank the many wonderful sponsors of this show, including my dear friend Carol, who's been assigned to my website, providing wonderful support, and my dear friend Michiko Hayashi, as well as Hiro Emoto, Mrs. Emoto, and Dr. Yasu Nimoto of the Emoto Peace Project and Emoto Office in Tokyo, Japan, my friends in the Galactic Alliance who've been supporting my show, my angelic and earthly family, as well as my wonderful sound engineer, Eric, and my station manager, Eric Crema, without whose support and help this program would not be possible. Quickly, I wanted to tell everyone that I've started a new spiritual mentoring program. I help people get in touch with relatives and people who have passed on, and also do remote viewing. If you're interested, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, or you can call me here in the United States at area code 509-750-9793, or toll-free in the United States and Canada at 1-888-879-8339. And with that, I'd like to introduce Dr. Fernandez. Hi, Dr. Fernandez. How are you doing today?
Hello, very well. I'm just arriving in New York City and, almost landing at this very moment.
Oh, really?
Everything's fine, and very glad to hear from you and to be in your radio show again.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to have you on. You've had an incredibly interesting life. You've been a diplomat, a scholar, a doctor. You've done many lectures at many famous universities around the world, but it's all with the same purpose, isn't it, Dr. Fernandez, to make this world a better place?
Well, this is what I try since I was a little boy. When I started my studies in Spain, and then followed in England and the United States, my idea was to gain some kind of credibility for the time when I was supposed to be starting to talk to people about all these things, and always aiming to provide them with the relief and as well as the peace and the light they needed to become better persons and mm-hmm. to be able to help others too. So since my early childhood, I was very much devoted to become myself a reasonable prepared person for the time when the moment arrived.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, Dr. Fernandez, could you please tell my many listeners around the world about your wonderful conference in the Dominican Republic in August?
Yes, we are organizing this year the second World Conference on Peace and Light, which will take place in the Dominican Republic at the largest convention center in America. The place is called Bávaro Punta Cana, and it's a most beautiful place with, in my opinion, the world's top beaches with white sands and a weather all year round and absolutely outrageous. And something very important is that we will be having the top-notch, the first-class keynote speakers on these two aspects of global life, peace and light. This year, we are bringing up to now, we are bringing Victor Trubiano, for example, who is a person nowadays living in Indonesia. And this person has been for the last 7 years maneuvering and living without eating and drinking. He hasn't drunk any water, any liquid, or eaten any food since 7 years ago.
Oh, my God.
So he will be there explaining us how he manages to do this.
Wow.
The process is called Aenidia. There are several people around the world doing the same thing, but he will be coming to the conference. Then we have Julie Viglione from New York, who is a very well known person, a renowned person in themes as ascension. And how to lead a better life to help others.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have Stuart Pearce. He is from England. He's one of the world's top coaches. And also he's channeling angels. He's been the preceptor and instructor of Lady Diana in his time and Margaret Thatcher and some people like... Vanessa Redgrave, for example, and many others, he will be there too. Then Juan José Benítez, who is probably the Spanish most recognized and world-renowned writer.
Mm-hmm.
He's the writer of the series The Trojan Horse, translated into many languages. And we are happy to have him this year because he's been... at least 10 years that he has refused to join congresses and conferences, and he will be coming this year.
That's wonderful.
Then we have Michiko Hayashi, as you mentioned before, Enrique Quesados from Mexico, Braxto, who is very well known also, he's from Croatia, former Yugoslavia, and he's going to give a lecture entirely by telepathy. I mean, just in looking at the people, he will be talking to them with his eyes.
Wonderful.
Then Emission T, also Paola Cordoma, Dr. Madame Bali, I mean, a world-renowned personality also, Marilyn Rosner, Dr. Marilyn Rosner, who's a psychiatrist, and a world-famous medium. She was the person who inspired Steven Spielberg that film called The Poltergeist.
Oh.
She will be there too.
Fantastic.
Maria Veronica Ricard, Ryan Whitewolf coming from Australia. Then we have Roy Littleton, who is a grandfather from coming from the Hopi Indians in Arizona. Sixto Paz. Who is one of the persons most widely recognized in the UFO research and phenomena. Fernando Malcolm, the person who wrote that television series and produced it, the Horus I and the Atlantis, and many others. I mean, it's going to be really, really amazing this year. And every one of the days will be ending in a concert, with New Age music or symphonic music.
Beautiful.
I believe this is the most important event of this kind in the Americas.
Wonderful, and I'm so pleased that that you've invited me too to be a speaker there, Dr. Fernandez. Thank you so much.
Definitely. Last but not least. Ted Maher will be there in first class, first row.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And while I'm there, I'll be giving messages from some great spirits, including Professor Albert Einstein, former President John F. Kennedy, his brother, Senator Robert F. Kennedy, Michelle de Nostradamus, Mahatma Gandhi, as well as some other famous spirits. So I'm very happy to, very honored to come as well.
It will definitely be very enjoyable for us all.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful. And if people, I have the website here. It's www.paxluxmundi.com for people interested in registering. And it's not, the Dominican Republic is not that far. It's close to Florida, isn't it? Or how it's?
Yeah, it's very close to Florida. I guess it's close to everything because there are many people coming from South America. Mm-hmm. And it's also close to Panama. Panama is the real hub of all of the Americas, and everything is mm-hmm. coming from Panama. Mm-hmm. And the Dominican Republic is 1 hour and a half from Panama. Mm-hmm. So it's very convenient, very close, and I guess many people will be actually traveling to the conference because it's easy to go, and it's low season, so it's cheaper than any other season. You know?
Oh, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Well, I want to, Dr. Fernandez, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. And we have a couple of minutes left. Is there anything else? I'd love to have you wrap up this short interview with you about the conference, if you'd like to say anything.
Yes, well, basically, I'd like to encourage every one of the listeners to try to come and be there with us. The atmosphere is unique. If you get into the website www.paxluxmundi.com. You will see, I mean, what we have prepared. There are 3 days full of activities. Everything is included in the hotel, so there are like 24 different restaurants and the hotel is, well, actually it's a series of hotels under the same name, and they are also world top class. I mean, the 5-star, and so the atmosphere is unique, and last year, if you see the people, what did they say through the videos we have published, each and every one of them was absolutely amazed, and there were many other aspects that we would need to tell about. For example, there were many sightings. Every day there were sightings in the sky, in the beach. People, special people who appeared and disappeared. I mean, it's magic. Everything is magic in this conference.
That's so incredible, Dr. Fernandez. Well, I hope everyone can come. And I also plan to be broadcasting as well from the conference on Friday, August 19th. I broadcast on Friday afternoon. So I hope all my listeners can come. And the website, again, is www.paxluxmundi.com. And Dr. Fernandez, I just want to thank you so much for coming on today and sharing this with everyone.
Thank you again for your kind invitation, and all of my best wishes to all of our listeners today, and the best for all of them and their family from my side. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Fernandez. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Thank you so much. With that, I'd like to go on to an interview that I had with Eric von Doniken in Switzerland. It was about a week ago. I did a pre-record. And he's considered one of the world's most famous UFO researchers. Quickly, I wanted to tell you that he will be having a very special event at the historic Princess Anne Theatre in London on October 15th, 2016. That information will be posted on my website hopefully by next week. So you just go to my website at www.outofthisworld1150.com, and there will be an announcement for that. Also, Mr. von Doniken will be at Eureka Springs, Arkansas, at a special transformation conference April 5th through the 7th, which is coming right up. That website is www.ozarkmt.com. That's O-Z-A-R-K-M-T.com. And with that, I'd like to go on to this interview with Mr. von Doniken. Hopefully there's enough time. If there isn't, I'll play the rest during the next hour. So please hold on for this interview I had with Mr. von Doniken.
Well, I just want to thank you so much for coming on my program today. I wanted to ask you, you've got some wonderful things coming up, haven't you? You've got something coming up in Arkansas, I think, next month. And then Ramon sent me something about a wonderful event in October in London as well.
Yes, of course. First, next thing I have in coming up is from the 8th to the 10th April. This will be the 11th annual Ozark Mountain Transformation Congress, somewhere in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. So, and then from the April 5th to 7th. That's the 11th annual Ozark Mountain, tralala, etc. Eureka Springs. And from the 8th to the 10th is the UFO Congress. That's one thing I have coming up. Oh. And the next thing is Contact in the Desert from the 3rd to the 6th June in Joshua Tree. Joshua Tree is in California.
Oh, Joshua Tree. Sure, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
And finally, that's what you just mentioned. In England, in London, on October 15th, there is an Eric von Doniken Legacy Night, and this is going to be a very, very big thing. There should be that. You should find a lot of it in the internet. Ramon sent you already.
Ramon just sent me the information here this morning or last night, and I'll post it. I'll be happy to post it on my website, Eric. And one of the questions that for my listener, you've written some fascinating books. The last time we spoke, you had just returned from South America, where he had found some fantastic discoveries regarding an ancient airport. I remember that.
Okay. Well, yeah. It looks like an airport, but it's not an airport.
Uh-huh.
You see, we are talking about Nazca.
Okay.
Nazca is 500 kilometers south of Lima in Peru.
Mm-hmm.
When you fly over this desert, it's a flat land with mountain in the back. When mm-hmm. you fly over the desert, the first thing you see are some signs and pictures of, let's say, figures of fishes, monkeys, birds, flowers, and all these kind of things. When you fly a little higher, you see something which definitely looks like airstrips. These are large lines. The largest is 85 meter large, and they start abruptly, end abruptly. The longest is 3.8 kilometer long. They really look like an airport. That's the Indians call them las pistas. They mean the air pistas. So, but it's, of course, not an airport, but it looks really like. It's fantastic. Mm. Over Nazca, I have the best pictures which I can present in the world. I have 5,000 pictures about Nazca. And what we see sometimes on television about Nazca is really not the truth. It's not the reality. The reality is shocking. And that's why you should come to my speeches and look at all these fantastic pictures.
Oh, I would love to. I would love to. I was just curious, Eric, who do you think built those lines, and what purpose do you think that they had?
Well, I think they were made by the Indians there, but the purpose was extraterrestrials. Mm. You see, Nazca is not unique in the world. Mm-hmm. On different other continents and in other countries, for example, in Jordania or in Australia or in the ex-Soviet Union near the Lake of Aral, etc., and different other countries, we have also gigantic signs pointing to the sky. You can see them only from the air. So it's not only Nazca, it's a worldwide phenomenon. And why? I know, and this is my profession, because I know the ancient holy and unholy books, I know in antiquity they were writing about flying machines. For example, King Solomon had one of these flying machines. He was flying over the lands, over the hills, over the mountains, even over the oceans. He had some maps. All this is handed down in a book which is called the Kebra Negest. This Kebra Negest is the old old Ethiopian book of the kings. So there are others in ancient India and so on. So mythology is full of flying machines. I think now our ancestors, Stone Age people, they saw some of these flying gods flying over their countries, over their land, and they wished to give them sign. They wanted that they come back. Hey, come to us, bring us gifts, presents. We are ready for you. We have offerings for you, and so on. So the humans, the natives, made the signs, but in such overdimensional size that you can see them only from the air.
That is just fascinating. I know that I used to live in India for several years, and there was tales that I'd heard in the ancient Hindu texts about an ancient war that the gods were fighting in the deserts of Rajasthan west of New Delhi. And
definitely.
And there were also tales of, Eric, about nuclear war and how warfare and how they'd gotten so hot that the sand actually had been melted into glass.
You are very well informed. You see, in old Indian, we have the so-called Vedas,
right?
The Vedic texts, and there are thousands of it, not speaking of hundreds, right. Thousands of pages of it. Mm-hmm. And one of the Vedic texts is called the Mahabharata, and there in the fifth book with the name Mausala Purva, you find the war of the gods. They had space cities. They were cities surrounding our planet. We know it because some of the humans were up there as guests. And when they came back, they, of course, handed down what they have seen up there. And some of these gods were fighting against each other with gigantic weapons, atomic weapons, terrible thing. All this is really handed down in the Mahabharata in the fifth book.
Fascinating. That's just fascinating because I've heard about that. I haven't personally read it. If I wanted to, are those copies readily available on the marketplace to find? And actually...
No, these are all old texts. Old, thousands of years old. There are modern translations. The best one dates from the 1890 English translations of the Mahabharata. But just take one of my books. In most of my books, I come up to this old Indian text.
Wonderful.
And I give the exact source where you find them, in which old book, which page, etc. Because when you look for it, you take, for example, the Mahabharata. This along in the original version, in the English version, has about 800 pages.
Oh, my goodness.
It's an incredible amount of text which we have.
Wow. You know, one of the beautiful things about your work, Eric, is that you lend a fabulous perspective on events and things here on this planet that other people just haven't thought about at all. And I know that from your famous book, Chariots of the Gods, my godfather in Chicago, Ted, bless his soul, he's passed on now, but he loved your work and always talked... He's the person that got me interested in your works many, many years ago.
Well, that speaks for the intelligence of your godfather. You know, in the meantime, I have published 40 titles.
Wow.
40 titles with the world, world edition of nearly 62 million copies.
Wow.
And really, the amount of literature and the amount of knowledge has become so large, so big.
Mm-hmm.
That I am the specialist in the field. Concerning other fields, I am as stupid as everyone else.
Well, I wouldn't say you're stupid. Please don't say that. what do you think about the pyramids? Because there's of course pyramids in Egypt. There's pyramids in Mesoamerica. Do you think they were all built at the same time? And what kind of purpose do you think?
No, not at all.
No?
You see, concerning the Great Pyramid in Egypt. Egyptology believes that it was a pharaoh with the name of Cheops who constructed that. And Cheops was living about 2,500 BC, so roughly from today, 4,500 years. And the only proof for the Cheops is a little writing which was found in one of the chambers. But there is no tomb of Cheops, there is no statue of Cheops, nothing. In the meantime, it turned out definitely that this writing, which was used as a proof for Cheops, is wrong. It's a falsificate. It's definitely a falsificate. Now, there are not only Western historians You see, some 2,000 of years ago, we had Herodotus, we had Platon, we had Strabon, we had Plutarch. All these wise men, they all were in Egypt. So we have not only Western historians, there are also Arabian historians. One of them is called Ibrahim Abdul Al-Mas'udi. And in his large work about the Great Pyramid, he said that the Great Pyramid was constructed before the Great Flood by a king with the name of Saurit. And then he precises, Saurit is exactly the same figure which the Hebrew community calls Enoch. Now, Enoch, again, was the seventh patriarch before the Great Flood. And Enoch definitely was in contact always with extraterrestrials. They taught him in different sciences, etc. Enoch finally left our planet in a fiery chariot. He was the first human who left the planet before the Great Flood. And before he left the planet, he gave to his son, his son's name was Methuselah, over 100 scientific books, and said to him, now, Methuselah, I give you all these books written by your father's hand. Keep them carefully for the generations after the Great Flood. So that all was made before the Great Flood. Now, in the meantime, in the past 2 or 3 years, thanks to modern electronics, more and more shafts and little rooms are found in the Great Pyramid. So the mystery of the Great Pyramid is becoming bigger and bigger. It's always fascinating. The pyramids in India and in Central America date from another time. That's the time we know more or less after Jesus Christ, starting about 700-800 BC and coming back to our age. So it's not comparable to the Great Pyramid in Egypt.
Fascinating, fascinating. There was, I'm sure you've heard of Edgar Cayce, the famous American psychic
medium. Of course, yes.
And one of his writings that just came to mind was that he had said that before the end of Atlantis, Eric, that they had deposited the records of their civilization in 3 different locations, one of which was at the left paw of the Sphinx underneath. I'm sure you've heard of that. I'd love your information on that.
Again, in the past years, 2 geologists have made measurements under the Sphinx in Egypt. And with these modern measurements, they really found hollow places beneath the Sphinx. But in practice, they were never allowed to make any diggings. So you know by measurement that there must be something under the Sphinx. Sure. But in praxis, we have no proof.
Sure.
It might well be that there we find books and writings thousands of years old, books which shake completely our society.
Well, what was interesting, I remember about Edgar Cayce's writings, Eric, and I'd love to run this by you, was that those records would be found at an appropriate time for humanity. In other words, when humanity was ready for this information, and they had, we weren't warring, and we were extremely interested in our past, then those records would be available. Up until that time, they wouldn't be available, which I thought was very, very interesting.
That's true. You see, the so-called gods, the extraterrestrials, when they were here, they behaved themselves in a way as today's ethnologists would do. They studied some of the tribes. They learned a few languages. They disappeared, but they disappeared with the promise to return in a far future. They could calculate more or less how many thousands of years it would go that they return here. And they could also calculate more or less the evolution, the technological evolution of mankind. So they will know at a certain time they are ready, these humans, they have flying machines, they have atomic bombs, they start with the primitive space travel to the moon, they send some probes to Mars, etc. All this they knew in advance. You can calculate this with the knowledge. And they knew it will be the time when we return. The same thing happened with these books. You know, for example, in your country, in the United States, there is the religion of the Mormons. Now, I personally, I'm not Mormon, but I just know their book, the Book of Mormon and other writings of the Mormon. There again, one of the Mormons, thousands of years ago, had a contact with an extraterrestrial. And these extraterrestrials also promised to return in the future. And he says when it will be. He says it will be at that time when humans have the technology to hear about wars and earthquakes and catastrophes all over the world at the same time. Today, we have our information. We have our satellite systems. We know of catastrophes, earthquakes, wars all over the world very, very fast.
Sure.
Only our generation is the first generation who knows this. So for me, it seems it's time that they return.
And I think they will, actually. I really do. I have the feeling that we're just on the verge of it, frankly. And I think I think for many of them, Eric, they're watching. A lot of them don't interfere. But it's just a fascinating points you bring up. There's one thing too I wanted to ask you about, and that's, I'm sure you've heard of this. There's an old 15th century map that I've heard about by a Turkish admiral.
Yes, Piri Reis.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Could you tell my listeners a little bit about that?
Yes,
it's a fascinating
the map
story.
The map was designed in the year 1519 by a Turkish admiral.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Piri Reis. But Piri Reis said, he was also writing, he wrote down that this map was a composition put together of several much older maps which they showed him in Alexandria, in the library of Alexandria.
Wow.
And from this older map, he made together the one map, the Piri Reis map. Now, this Piri Reis map was on board of a ship. The wreck was found about 100 years ago. And the funny thing is, on this map of Piri Reis, you clearly and definitely, with no doubt, you see the coastline of the Antarctic,
mm-hmm.
and you see little islands before the coastline.
Mm.
But the Antarctic, for us, since 10,000 years or more, are covered by a thick level of ice.
Mm-hmm.
So how is it possible that some Antarctic coastlines, and in the correct way, including mm-hmm. islands, are on this old map?
Mm.
The map must be older than 12,000 years.
Fascinating.
So it's a mystery, but the map is here. There are scientific studies on this map and scientific publications.
Mm. It's amazing, really, to think that all of this knowledge is very ancient, and we're just kind of rediscovering it now after so many years.
Well, the problem is all the libraries were destroyed. See, in the past,
mm-hmm.
I mean 2,000, 3,000 years ago,
mm-hmm.
we had millions of books, not 10,000 or 100,000, millions of it, and they were all destroyed.
Wow.
For example, the Library of Alexandria had 500,000 volumes. It was the library was destroyed three times. The Library of Pergamon in Greece, the Library of Ethiopia, of the old Ethiopian kings, the library in Asia, all over, in Central America, when the Spanish conqueror came to Central America,
mm-hmm.
Bishop Diego de Landa gave order to destroy and to burn down every book.
Wow.
There were thousands of it.
Wow.
So if we still would have that information from the past, it would be very, very easy for us to prove that extraterrestrials were here, and we would even be able to give a date when they return.
Hmm.
But all what we have is left mythology and, you know, religious books. So
right.
we have to take our information out of this information. But there was much more, my goodness.
Well, you mentioned mythology. It's a very interesting question, of course. In ancient Greece, of course, the mythology of Zeus and these giants. And do you think they have a basis in fact?
The giants?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, yes, yes,
mm-hmm.
yes.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely had giants.
Mm-hmm.
I have once written a short article, only about 20 pages, about giants. And giants in the mythology, they exist practically in every tale.
Mm.
But not only in mythology, some bones were found of gigantic humans. Now, in anthropology, they say, well, this was some mountain apes.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not true. Even in the Bible, for example, you find the giants in the apocryphic texts. So the literature, the antique literature, is full of giants.
Mm.
Something like giants must have existed.
Mm. Fascinating, fascinating. Well, they and during the early part of the settling of my own country here in the United States, Eric, settlers often would run across bones of huge humans. They were all sent to many of them were sent to the Smithsonian Institution here in Washington, D.C., but it's funny, but that institution's buried them. I mean, not buried them, but covered them up so that it's funny about people's perceptions. Sometimes they'll find evidence like you have. Have you found a problem with people accepting your research and your findings?
Of course, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the conservative science, archaeology still has their own meaning, which I fully understand.
Sure.
I also understand the critics. This is normal. if someone comes up with a crazy idea like I had one in Chariots of the God, mm-hmm. you are criticized. Mm-hmm. We are not living in a dictatorship, not in a scientific dictatorship. Right. So we have to learn from each other. But whenever I have critical scientists and we discuss together in a honest way, mm-hmm. not bluffing, not cheating, mm-hmm. just honest, and we give time to everyone to express himself, after 2 or 3 hours, the other side, the scientific part, always says to me, Eric, we didn't know that. We don't have that information. Sure. We never hear about it. Sure. And slowly we came together. I learned from them, and they learned from us. But the situation today is that more and more scientists, of course, all of them who deal with the subject, more of them, they came to the same result. This planet was visited by beings from outer space, and something with humans' past is wrong. Of course, we are the product of evolution, but not only. It seems that from time to time, some artificial mutation were made. Right. Some information from outside was put into our genes, mm-hmm. and we are the product now.
One of my degrees, Eric, is in anthropology, actually, from the University of California, Berkeley. And I remember going through my classes there, and they would never talk about material found in your books because it's they just kind of ignored it. And what's significant?
Of course, it seems to be nonsense. But
yeah.
Not any longer. You know, not only I have published 40 books, also many, many colleagues. Mm-hmm. And some of these colleagues are really scientific. Mm-hmm. Of course, each one from another branch, mm-hmm. be it from the philosophy, be it from archaeology, or be it from space travel, etc. Mm-hmm. They have come up with their publication from their point of view. Mm-hmm. And it turns more and more, yes, we were visited. And I say this, it's good to know the past so that we are not shocked when they arrive again. And they will arrive again.
Oh, absolutely. Or later. Absolutely. There's a fascinating author I interviewed here about a month ago named Michael Tellinger from South Africa. And I'm sure you know him, Eric. He's written a book called Slave Species of the Gods. And
yes.
his tenet in his book, his premise, is that we were basically created to be the slave species of these visiting extraterrestrials from other places on this planet. Anyway, I'd love
the situation is complicated, more complicated than we think.
Mm-hmm.
There is one theory. The theory was published first time 80 years ago by the Swedish Nobel Prize winner, Svante Arrhenius. The theory has the name panspermia. Mm-hmm. Now, panspermia says some intelligent form of life had an interest to spread out in a certain section of their Milky Way their own form of life. Mm-hmm. Now, you do not start with spaceships. It's too complicated. There are too many possibilities. You simply infect a sector of your Milky Way with so-called, DNA.
Mm-hmm.
You know exactly that most of this DNA will be captured by a sun, come into the gravity of a sun, mm-hmm. will burn. Other parts will come into the gravity of a big planet like Jupiter. A small part of it will come into the gravity of planets which are similar to the one which started the game, mm-hmm. panspermia. And now life begins. Mm-hmm. I have learned in school. I was 6 years in a boarding school led by Jesuits, very intelligent people, mm-hmm. I have learned that life on Earth, it all started with this primordial soup. You know, mm-hmm. atoms have found together and they've formed the first molecules, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, some of the leading scientists, like Sir Francis Crick,
mm-hmm.
or like Professor Dr. Vikram Singh, he has mm-hmm. 3 doctor degrees of a British university, they say, no, this theory is out. The information of life has come from outside on this planet, mm-hmm. and the rest is evolution. So we are the product of evolution, but the information has come from outside.
Mm-hmm.
And this, again, deals with old holy writings, mm-hmm. by the way, in the Bible, but not only mm-hmm. in the Bible, where they say the gods created humans according to their own image.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at it with this point of view, as panspermia, we are, so to say, the offsprings of another solar system.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
this does not contradict evolution.
No.
Just the information came from outside. The rest was all evolution on our planet.
One of the fascinating things I found in the Bible, Eric, and I'm sure you know a lot more about this than I do, but was that people lived during the time of Moses for hundreds of years, much longer than they do today. And
well, at least in the figures in the Bible, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yes. Enoch and Methuselah and all these figures, they were living for 500 to 800 years.
My goodness.
We have no explanation for this.
My goodness. My goodness. And today we're lucky if we live to 100. But do you think those times will come back? Do you think we'll live once again for many hundreds of years?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, our genetics are doing a brilliant job, mm-hmm. and they are finding out why we become older, and they will find a way to stop this. So I think a human's age of maybe 150 years would be normal in 100 years in the future, but not a life of 800 or 900 years. That, I don't think so.
Well, I think I honestly think you're right, and I think our longevities will really increase. I have to ask you, Eric. Every time I talk to you, you're always doing some fascinating things for research. What plans do you have to investigate, and any trips planned for the future to travel different places in the world?
This is a never ending story. Whenever something happened in archaeology, when they found things. And there are questions, of course, things which are thousands and thousands of years old, mm-hmm. not young things. I'm not interested in what happened to the ancient Romans or the ancient Greeks. It mm-hmm. must be much older. Mm-hmm. Then I hear it, and then I fly there. Mm-hmm. And because I myself, I'm an old man. I'm 81 years old. Mm. I have good connections in my lifetime, mm-hmm. good connections with archaeologists. We are not alone at all adversaries mm-hmm. to fight each one another. Mm-hmm. Obviously, in public or in television, we do things like this, but not in personal discussions. Mm-hmm. So I hear always when something new is discovered, and then I go there. And the next discovery will probably be made in Egypt, but it's too early to discuss about this.
Okay. All right. That's fine. That's fine. Now, the archaeological history of Egypt is fascinating because Napoleon, I think from my memory, Eric, he was one of the first people at the turn of the, 19th centuries?
Yes.
Who actually led an expedition there and did a lot of really interesting archaeology.
Well, and he had scientists. I mean, scientists, French scientists at that time in his team.
Right.
The French scientists who went with Napoleon, they made the first exact measurements in the pyramid.
Fascinating. Fascinating. And like the Nazca lines, they can be seen from outer space, can't they?
Yes, but not from very far away.
Not very far.
Some astronauts in orbit, they have photographed it. You can see it from an orbit.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I would say if you are on the moon or even farther, you cannot see them.
Do you think like the Nazca lines, they were beacons to extraterrestrial travelers coming in from outer space?
Well, the humans made them, but the purpose was that extraterrestrials should see it.
Mm-hmm.
They should be an information from the ground. Mm-hmm. Hey, we are here. Mm-hmm. We wait for you. Please visit us again.
Fascinating.
Some 10 or 15 years ago, some of the American scientists, and it was an astronomer, I don't know which one, mm-hmm. he made a suggestion that in the United States, we should make a gigantic field of corn. Mm. But this gigantic field of corn in the form of a triangle. Mm. A triangle which has a side length of maybe 100 kilometers. And so a triangle and around this triangle, we should maybe make a circle with certain flowers, for example, with moon flowers. The mm-hmm. idea was when an extraterrestrial intelligence observers with their telescopes, mm-hmm. they should see that every year at a certain time, a gigantic triangle appears surrounded by a colored ring. Mm-hmm. So to giving an optical sign. And with Nazca, it's something similar. Hmm. They were optical signs for the beings who fly up there.
Fascinating, fascinating. One thing I've always been interested in is Stonehenge. Eric, have you done much research on Stonehenge?
Oh, yes. I have published a book about this Steinzeit. Stonehenge was completely different. In England, Stonehenge, archaeology said, it was constructed in different etapes, or whatever. Mm-hmm. So the first construction part was 2800 BC, and then the next one 700 years later. But in the meantime, new discovery under Stonehenge have shown that there are older stones than today's Stonehenge. Mm-hmm. And the older stones, again, are put on lines in astronomical forms. So Stonehenge is older than what we have believed before. In the meantime, they discuss about the beginning of Stonehenge, 5,000 BC. Wow. Before it was 2,800 BC. And that happened to so many other Stone Age settling. In Germany in the last year, mm-hmm. by air archaeology, they have discovered two rings in stone, and they are all terribly old. Mm-hmm. Or in Ireland, you have a gigantic dolmen called Newgrange. Newgrange is astronomically orientated, and is about 5,000 years old. So the question is, all these things were made by Stone Age people. Mm-hmm. No doubt, they were the constructors. Mm-hmm. But why? Mm-hmm. What at the hell had Stone Age people who are just, well, from a technological point, they are simple. Why have they oriented their rings, their tombs, in an astronomical way? They were always watching the sky. They were always watching for movements up there.
That's true.
Always watching that something returns. Mm-hmm. It all, these stone settlings thousands of years ago, they all have to do with astronomy. Mm. And that's the question, because it's not normal that primitive Stone Age people all deal with astronomy.
Fascinating, fascinating. I have to ask you about the statues, too, in Easter Island, because on my Facebook page, someone posted a research recently where they found that those heads at Easter Island, Eric, actually go much deeper, much, much deeper than just what you can see at the top surface.
Yes, but in Easter Island, I don't think that we have a real mystery which has to do with extraterrestrials. Mm-hmm. The statues were definitely made by humans, mm-hmm. because you are able to make them. And some people even found the tools with which they were made. Mm. The question is just, what do they represent? Mm-hmm. You know, these figures, these faces, they look like robots with narrow lips and so on. Why the natives, the native population, mm-hmm. they have a face which is rather soft, with large lips and so on. What do they represent? Mm. And why? What for were they made? For what mm-hmm. purpose? Mm-hmm. These answers are missing, but the way how they were chiseled out is explainable.
Well, what's interesting, I have heard rumors that those statues actually represented the Anunnaki who were here, allegedly here, many, many thousands
of years
ago.
Yeah, I know the story from Zachariah Sitchin, but I don't believe this.
Okay.
You cannot exclude it. Why not?
Sure.
But I personally don't believe it.
Sure. And going back to Sitchin's work, what do you think of his work? He had interpreted all these interesting cuneiform tablets.
Yeah, you see, I met him many times, and mm-hmm. he was a charming and very intelligent man, mm-hmm. Zachariah Sitchin. Mm-hmm. And all what he did with his Sumerian translations, this certainly has to be respected. It's a great job. I know a German Sumerologist, a professor doctor in Sumerology, who told me just some months ago that some part of Zachariah Sitchin's translations are wrong. Now, I cannot judge which one is wrong, which one is right. Mm-hmm. In one point, I always disagreed with Zachariah Sitchin, and we had discussion to this, mm-hmm. friendly discussion together. He has said that there is a planet, an unknown planet, which is in our solar system and surrounds the sun in 3,800 years.
Oh, right.
And I was always against it.
Right.
If we really would have a planet in our solar system, and 3,000 years orbit is so long, at some time it must be easy cold out there, like on Pluto. Then it must be warm again. So it's hard to believe that life should have evolved on such a planet.
Sure.
And the other thing is, you see, our NASA is sending probes to, for example, to Mars.
That's true.
Now, these probes have no rocket propulsion. Mm-hmm. They are just shoot them out from the Earth, mm-hmm. and then they come into the gravity of the Moon, mm-hmm. the gravity of the Mars, they jump to the next planet, etc. Mm-hmm. If we would have another planet in our solar system, all these calculations of gravity would be wrong. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Our satellites, our probes, would not fly the way they have done it and the way it was calculated.
Sure. Well, it's a fascinating subject, and I hope that one day soon our children or our children's children, Eric, will be able to travel to the far corners of the solar system to find some definitive
answers. Our children should do this, I hope.
Absolutely.
Now, slowly I have to stop here because at 1:30, I have someone which is knocking on my door here.
Oh, no, really? Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Well, if you don't mind, I just wanted to ask you just a couple more questions.
Yes, just come on.
When's your next, where is your next place you're going to as far as research goes? You said Egypt.
As far as research goes. Now, research, I don't know where I go next.
Okay.
What I do as next is April 5 to 7. I am in Eureka Springs.
Mm-hmm.
This is in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
Public speeches and you are for. Then, as I said in the beginning, there is contact in the desert.
Oh, yes.
In Joshua Tree. That's in June, mm-hmm. 3rd to 6th.
Wonderful.
And the big thing is in London mm-hmm. on October 15th. This is the Eric von Däniken Legacy Night. There you have to go into the internet. This is, you cannot explain this. You have to see this. This is a worldwide event.
Wonderful, wonderful. And Eric, if you could please give my many listeners around the world your wonderful website where people could find out more about your wonderful work.
Oh, God, I have to give this phone to my secretary, Ramon, because I don't know these kind of things. Wait a second.
All right.
I would just give it to you. Wait.
Right.
What other question do you have?
Well, I just wanted to say that I thank you so much for coming on today. And I was going to ask you, too, are there any final thoughts you'd like to leave with my many listeners around the world?
No. Well, always have an open mind. Mm-hmm. We have different points of view from the scientific world, and not only from the scientific world. And in some parts, we should be a little unreasonable. Mm-hmm. You see, science learns us to be reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
For example, science says the distances between the stars are measured in light years.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not possible to reach these distances. So it is unreasonable to believe that extraterrestrials were here.
Mm-hmm.
Or the sciences, and this is absolutely reasonable, they say extraterrestrials would never look like us. Evolution of another planet goes completely different.
Mm-hmm.
But they have no idea of panspermia.
Mm-hmm.
So, in some parts, we should be a little unreasonable,
mm-hmm.
in parts where we have indications to be unreasonable. And then we come maybe to another answer, as some part of the science has done it.
I just want to thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your time with my many listeners around the world. You're doing fascinating work. And I think of all the people that I know in the world who've done research in UFOs, you're changing the world by raising consciousness and opening people's minds up to this fascinating historical research.
Well, thank you for the compliment, but you are a wonderful interviewer anyhow.
Oh.
And I think really we should open our mind,
mm-hmm.
not in every stupidity, but if we have indications that something is different than we believe, we should open our mind. Thank you. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Vielen Dank. Vielen Dank, Eric.
Okay.
And have a wonderful day, my friend.
Vielen Dank. Bye-bye. Ciao.
Okay. Tschüss. Bye-bye. Tschüss.
Hello, friends. That was an interview I had with Eric von Däniken. He's one of the world's most famous UFO researchers. We will be coming back in a few minutes after this break to talk about two wonderful conferences which are coming up in Olympia, Washington from June 10th to the 13th and Helsinki, Finland from May 12th through the 15th. I'll be having Scott Lemriel on, and I plan to invite Eric von Däniken to my conference in Olympia. So I'd like to play this special song in dedication to all those who want a better future.